Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. I'm speaking with Bob Anderson today. Bob is the founder and chairman of the Leadership Circle. He's the creator and author of the Leadership Circle Profile, an integrated, innovative leadership assessment tool that is used prolifically globally. He's also the author of Mastering Leadership and the author of Scaling Leadership. And today we're going to be exploring his latest work, which has led to the creation of the Unity Academy, which is a community of transformation and a practitioner school for unity-informed integral practice, the practice of conscious leadership. So we'll talk today about Bob's own journey with cultivating intuition, how he started to receive downloads, the practices that enabled him to refine his intuition. We'll talk about a post-conventional understanding of reality that can open us to post-conventional leadership. And we'll talk about some of the practices that can lead us to cultivate unity-informed leadership. That all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Bob Anderson. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So Bob, it's really great to be with you again. How do I find you in this moment?
Very good. A wonderful day, lots emerging, and joyful heart.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot to talk about today.
We always do, Joel. I love these conversations.
Yeah. Well, I'll dive right in, actually, and we're going to talk about the type of leadership that you see is necessary in these times in our conversation today. But actually, I'd like to begin with the question about how did you end up meeting Jude Kuravan and some of the others that you interviewed for the series you made, the Deep Connect series? What was the journey that led up to meeting them and what did you learn from them? Yeah.
Well, I've had a contemplative practice for years. And I was on retreat, probably 3 days in, silent retreat meditation. So I was really cooking, baked in the energy. And I woke up in the morning and it was a dark room, and above me, sort of hanging in the space between me and the ceiling, in bold yellow letters, was E=mc². And I immediately went, what in the is that? Or what's that doing here? With some expletives. And I tried to make it go away like it was some sort of but it didn't. It stayed there for a while. And I've never had anything happen like that. Now, I've done a lot of energetic work, healing work. So I'm used to making things up or having retinal effects, or where you say, "Oh, I think I'm seeing," and you're really not. And this was, I checked that out. And then that ushered in a process of downloading, getting information intuitively about physics. Now, I'm not trained in the sciences, so I'm just writing down what I'm getting, which has been a practice for me. And I have no way to validate it about energy and frequency and information. And so I started to read. And one of the first books I grabbed, I don't know whether it's recommended or what, was Jude Kervan's book, The Cosmic Hologram, which is the first in a trilogy of books that she's writing. And in it, she overviews the new scientific paradigm, emergent paradigm. It's technical. I've probably read it four times and I'm finally understanding it. But I reached out to her and she was great. She's very gracious. And we've been in a conversation ever since. So I've learned a lot. She's helped guide my inquiry into physics, checks me when I get it wrong, shapes how I can say it more accurately because it's very complex. And when you try to simplify it, you can actually get it wrong. And so we've had a great relationship. So I interviewed her for the Deep Connect series, which was a wonderful conversation. But that began my inquiry into what literally blew my mind. And now I come to realize that it's eloquently integrated or integrating with the fundamental understanding of the wisdom traditions. And so we're at for me a very exciting time in history where one, because of the internet and now books being translated, there's much more of that sacred literature available, and you can study it cross-culturally in a way that's new. And we're seeing there a great symphony or chorus, not different pieces of music. It's they all, in a remarkable way, are pointing to the same fundamental reality with different language and different harmonies and nuances, but one single chorus. And quantum physics, in its language and methodology, is describing that same fundamental reality and how it works. And so I've been in that inquiry now for about 4 years. And it's that it literally turns the current paradigm that we're operating out of on its head. And that's a big deal because the current paradigm we're in is imploding. Consciousness manifests. What we're seeing on the world stage is our collective consciousness laying out, and it's not working. It's imploding. Back to normal. When we were in COVID, we were trying to get back to normal. That's a death sentence. We need a whole new normal. And it needs to be written out of the emergent paradigm. Because the current paradigm is fundamentally wrong. Fundamentally, meaning base condition, base understanding of reality, is fundamentally wrong. And you can't build anything effective, mastery in anything, sports, music, anything, if you don't have the fundamentals right. And we don't have the fundamentals right. And it's playing out now dramatically in a world that's gone Matt in large measure.
I want to ask you about those different paradigms in a moment, but so you literally were seeing E equals MC squared on the roof.
Yeah, and that's never happened before or since, but I was literally seeing it.
Yeah. I've heard of like other people sharing story more, seems more so recently as well, of like how they suddenly became like became interested isn't the right word. It suddenly started downloading kind of like Sean Hagen's talked about suddenly becoming writing down a kind of language, you know, like a graphical kind of language in some way. And what do you make of that? Like that you saw this on the ceiling and then suddenly you started to write about physics.
I've had a practice of practicing intuition. So it's been a practice. I first got onto it with in the 80s, the early 80s, with Innovation Associates. And part of, if you go back to Peter Senge's book, The Fifth Discipline, one of the masteries included in his notion of personal mastery was the balancing of intuition with reason. And so they taught or had us play around with certain intuitive exercises that blew me away. And I still teach those exercises in our work to this day. And it blows people away every time that they have access to this kind of information. And of course, our current paradigm doesn't support that. There's no mechanism by which that makes any sense. Nonetheless, I've been practicing it, and it has been the source of everything that's emerged in my career. In the interview with Federico Fajin on the Deep Connect series, Federico, and I just posted this to the internet, Federico, he's the inventor of the microprocessor. So he invented the technology that made the first microchip possible, and he invented the first microchip, and he's been a serial inventor ever since, serial entrepreneur. And then he had a break open in consciousness, was flipped him from the current paradigm to the emergent paradigm. It was a profound spiritual experience, and he wasn't a spiritual person. But in this, he's describing the process by which invention happens and how it's related to consciousness and intuition. And he says, you know, people think scientists, it's like if you really study science and mathematics, they get the stuff intuitively. Most of us think, well, they get the idea and then they attribute it to rationality. That's not how it works. Rationality works it out, and rationality is part of the process of wanting to know and struggling to figure it out. But the invention happens in a download. He's very precise about that, and so are the sciences. And so Einstein talked about it. The intellect has little to do on the road to discovery. So I've been practicing this balance. And so receiving a download on a chapter in a book or on a whole new design for a workshop, right in the middle of the workshop, is not new to me. That's how I've learned to operate. And in the interview, he literally says that it's the source of creativity, intuition, the genesis source of it. And we discard it because we don't have a mental model where that makes sense in our understanding of reality. So it gets discarded and dismissed. And yet it's an extraordinarily important human capacity that we need to develop. And nothing in our upbringing points us to that.
Yeah.
So it lies dormant in many.
What is that practice that you do? Are you, is it a specific practice or have you just in sense generally oriented to practices that open you to intuition.
Yeah. Well, they've grown over time. The first one I use, and we teach this, is called a teacher. We call it the teacher exercise. And we have people, we do a little guided visualization to just kind of open up, information pathways in the person, field of the person. We'll talk about fields and we get into the quantum mechanics of it. But and then we have them imagine that they're walking into a schoolhouse, which is a symbol for consciousness or awareness or learning or wisdom, or walking into a one-room schoolhouse. They sit down and somehow their teacher appears. And we don't specify what that means or who that is or anything, just your teacher appears. And we have them establish a heart connection because the heart is very central to the whole process of intuition. And then we have them have a conversation with their teacher. Ask a question that's really on your mind and listen. See what comes back. And when we do this with people, they're quite moved by what comes back. And it seems really insightful. So I learned this from Innovation Associates back in the 80s. And I, because my rational mind was saying this is all BS, I decided to do an experiment when I was traveling around the world with my wife that I would do that every day and write down whatever I got, unedited, and not judge it until I got home, which was about 4 months. And then it would either be a bunch of garbage or it would be there'd be something meaningful there. Well, it blew me away within the first days, and I can't get into all the specifics of how it blew me away. But I left searching for my next job because I'd quit my job to go on this trip. I was in a job search. I came home and started my own business. And I didn't even have that as a fragment of a thought. And I had written down stuff that I was going to create in this business. And even today, Kim will remind me, you just did it. There it is, your second book. You wrote that you were going to write this book and then this book back in the 80s. So I've been plugging into this field of information for a long time. And then I went to I had a whole host of experiences in workshops that astonished me. We were doing very deep work on people's reactive patterns with leaders, AT&T. And one day on the third day, a woman walked in. And nobody in the room recognized her. She sat down at a table, and I'm starting the workshop, and I'm judging, thinking judgmentally in my head, who has the audacity to walk in on day three of a workshop, not having showed up for days one and two? What's with this? And then the people at her table looked like, and they said, Julie, is that you? Is that really you? I'm not making this up. She'd been there the whole time. She'd sat at that table the whole time. Her peers were at that table and they didn't recognize her. There was that much somatic change in her whole countenance and the colors in her face and the way she, there was so much change that it at first was hard to recognize her. And then she went on to tell the story of what had shifted, and it was a profound story. And I began to go, what is going on here? So I ended up years, a couple of years later, in a bioenergetic school for energy practice, learning about energy fields and somatic shifts and energy and so on. I won't get into all the particulars. It's called the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. I spent 4 intense years in it, again opening up pathways of intuition. It was all intuitive. high sensory perception and deepening your capacity, expanding your capacity to open into energetic awareness. And so my capacity for intuition took, grew. Now, some are more gifted here. I walked into that school and I felt like the remedial student. But nonetheless, we all have it. And it's been the guiding creative impulse that's generated everything that people now look at the leadership circle and the organization and all that's been created in the books and everything in it. And what they don't fully understand is it all kind of came through this way. All I did was follow it and say yes. And then a lot of rational hard work to figure it out, but and organize it and understand it and link it to other theories and frameworks. So there's a lot there, but the basic genesis was this capacity to tap the field or what's trying to come through me, through this body. Wordsworth once said, and I love this quote, "We lie in the lap of immense intelligence. We're the receivers of its truth and the organs of its activity." Receivers of its truth and the organs of its activity. This is no longer merely a philosophical or metaphysical statement. It's quantum physics. All of that I've been talking about is easily explainable, or at least explainable, from what we're now learning about the nature of the quantum field and how it works.
That's a good segue. I want to ask you about that, but just out of curiosity, the lady you mentioned, like what did happen? I mean, maybe it's breaking confidentiality, but
No, because there's no name and it's been years and years ago. But she walked in. She, if you've ever watched the Laura Croft movie where she's in the temple and those stone monsters are attacking her, they're moved with lumbering and gray in color, ashen in color. She walked like that. I was in the Brennan School, so I'm watching body types. Because energy forms body. Well, in quantum physics, it's all energy. There is no matter. Come back to that maybe. So it's all a field of energy. And I watched her walk like this, and I'm like, wow, look at the tightness, the contraction, and gray and everything. She walked out. Fluid, feminine, color. That's why nobody recognized her. And she said, "I gave up my femininity to make it in a man's world. I had to do that." And she talked at length about the nature of the culture in that particular organization. And then she said, "I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm done with that." And it was a galvanizing conversation because around it was, we can't because the culture, we can't, it's not possible here. There's no way we can live out our vision in this organization and all of the stuff you hear. And she said, "I don't care about any of that. Here's how I'm going to show up tomorrow, come what may, because I'm done with giving up who I am in order to fit in." And then the
Amazing.
whole day shifted around how we can really show up powerfully, empowered, which was the work of empowerment. How do you claim back the power you've given up? Right? And so that's the shift. But what struck me was how somatic it was. That went beyond the paradigm in which I was operating. See, that doesn't make sense in this paradigm.
Yeah.
And so I ended up in the Brennan School to kind of Again, guided by intuition, which is another amazing story, but I don't have time for it. I literally was directed to it in ways I didn't even know it existed. So, yeah, so that's how I kind of what shifted for her. And that wasn't the first one of them that I'd seen. I'd seen others where the whole body would just reconfigure right before you. Your eyes, but when they had a real breakthrough.
Yeah, I've seen that several times
Yeah,
too.
yeah.
Let's talk about the science and what you've discovered from your explorations. Like, could you contrast the two paradigms, quantum
Yeah.
physics with an older
Yeah.
paradigm?
Well, we're living in a paradigm that, at least in the West, and the West is moving kind of Western mind is sort of colonizing the world in large part. There's movement pushback on that now. But if you look in the West, we killed our mystics. The Western theocracies largely murdered their most spiritually adept, and or the those who really tapped into this energy field and were using it for healing and so on. They called them witches, and we burned them at the stake. So there's a whole history of throwing out what I talked about earlier, this fundamental chorus of non-dual tradition that is worldwide. And what was left was bogus. And then science comes along and says, that's all bogus, and replaced it with a paradigm of reality that is material only. And material is, and if you think about the word material, if it matters, it's material. If it doesn't, if it's immaterial, it doesn't matter. So matter matters. And anything that's not matter doesn't matter. And so there's this materialist and separatist. Everything is they're separate and disconnected in vast empty space. When one of the things that happened at the quantum revolution was that ether, some sense that there was a connecting tissue or fluid or plasma or whatever, something there that was thrown out and it became empty space. So now you have matter in completely empty space, completely disconnected, everything separate and dead and unconscious and unintelligent. That somehow through random collisions, self-organizes into life, into a self-aware life, and into ever more consciously complex forms. And it does so simply through randomness. The paradigm, the chorus I talked about, described across traditions is that reality is a fundamental unity. Only one. Different names for that one. There's only one awareness emerging as all things. Everything is inherently one. Well, those two paradigms couldn't be more juxtaposed. And so along comes quantum physics. And when you drop below what's called classical physics, the physics of large things, which is really quite precise, Newtonian physics, but actually doesn't describe the mechanics at the subatomic level, not even close. So at a more fundamental level, there's no matter. Literally, This is the language. It's called particle physics, but we know it's not a particle. It's not a thing. It's not a smaller beepy that is so small we call it a proton. It's only an energy, coherent energy form. So Einstein said, and this is standard physics, there's only energy. There is no matter. There's
That is
only
quote.
energy slowed to a frequency. Now, slowed down enough frequency-wise to be perceptible to the senses. And we call that matter, but it's really a field of energy at a frequency. And it's emerging from a field, a quantum field that's everywhere. So now ether comes back in. That there, what we call empty space, or have called it, and call it in the old paradigm, everything is separate and empty, floating in emptiness. Well, in the quantum world, there's this field, and everything is an extension of that one field, not separate. Actually, fundamentally interdependent, fundamentally a unity emerging in apparent separateness. Let me just say two more things about the field. Energy now, in the language of physics, is information. So it's accurate to say that it's all information. Not just random data, data in patterns, meaningful patterns, which is information. So it's an informational field informing form. This is why the Unity Academy we're talking about, it's unity informed integral leadership. And Jude Kirvan plays with informed with a hyphen. Informed. Inform. Information forming form. So when you're learning to, you're using practices and learning to expand your field, which you are, to a resonance where it's coherent with the information that you're wanting to come through, you get a download. This is what Federico describes. All of a sudden, it all comes in at once. Then you have to rationally unpack it and figure it out, but boom, and it comes. And this is a quantum experience. And there are practices that you can use to access that information more readily. You can also use the same practices to inform the field, to actually accelerate manifestation. And this is what Joe Dispenza, if you're familiar with Joe Dispenza's work, this is what he's really working on. How do you open into states of awareness, higher, more energetic, energy dense, higher frequency, more power? This is all physics, right? How do you move to the higher levels of the field with intention or holding the possibility of what you're trying to manifest? And that in and of itself accelerates its creation. So this is like the power of the secret, what we've known in success literature of the power of intention and getting clear on what you want and vision and all of that. All of that we know works. But now let's amp it up and use it at a higher frequency, because like microwave is more powerful than radio wave. It has a lot more energy and it's a much faster processing because it's vibrating faster. So faster processors vibrate faster. So when I'm meditating and opening to this energy field, I'm doing my best thinking. It's not, yes, it's a timeout, but it actually accelerates my learning and thinking process. This is where I get breakthroughs. So for me, it actually is accelerating the creative process, not slowing me down. I got to take a time out and meditate. And the reason I think this is important for leaders, Joel, is we have to invent on every front. And we have to we re need to rethink energy systems in the world. We need to create potentially free energy. Legitimate people think that's a possibility, though we don't know how yet. We're starting to get close on fusion. And so on. We've got to create new governance systems, new economic systems, financial systems. We've got to solve wealth inequality. There's so much that has to shift, but it's not going to shift, and it's not going to shift unless we fundamentally operate from the principle of our inherent unity, because we're operating on a principle of our separate individualness. And that immediately is. Creates scarcity as opposed to there's an unlimited field of potential here, and we're all inherently one. Now, how do we organize a society on that principle? And then access the emergent future that's trying to come through, and it's trying to come through me in a particular way. And it's coming through you in a particular way. And so the leading edge of leadership, in my opinion, now is to move beyond a kind of self-authoring, I'm creating or we're creating our future. That's powerful enough, to how do we allow ourselves to be a vehicle for what's trying to come through? And then use these capacities to more expeditiously manifest that future. Understand it, intuit it. Receive it, and then inform the field with it. That's, I think, the new paradigm.
It's interesting because I feel as a leader of Coaches Rising that that's one of my most important activities is to create that space to be able to
Yes.
access that field of inspiration and not to be too busy or too stressed or trapped within my conditioning that I'm not able to access that. And what I've noticed is when I get those ideas, they often manifest very much more easily. Like, and people who said they were kind of like, "Hey, I had an amazing time working with you, but I think I'm done right now." Suddenly, I think of them and I'm like, "Ah." And then I reach out and they're like, "Hey, you know what? I'm really up for this." So, yeah, that's what comes to mind.
The other, to play off of your first statement, that the more, and this is what we're largely teaching in the Unity Academy, is the more that I can open to the flow of information through my body and through, and you know, when I say body, I also mean field. Because it's all a field. This is just a frequency range of the field that is me. I exist on all these frequency ranges. And this is what the spiritual traditions have been saying. But in any event, the more I can allow and open and unconstrict that flow of information through the body, and that's a very tangible feeling. When you're in it, you know you're in it. It's very pleasurable. It's very, open, it's full of joy. The more I can open and resonate that, the more I become that presence that you just described, that creates the condition in the field of the room where everybody knows it's safe to talk, safety being minimum. Or even beyond that, we can all bring our best game and we all find ourselves surprised by what emerges. And that's the practice of dialogue that Isaacs and Bohm and Krishnamurti and so on worked out. But it's, I don't think, understood that it's fundamentally a state that you're in together. An expanded collective state of awareness where you are listening to what's emergent in the field that you're co-creating. And at its peak, it's speaking through you. You're listening and reporting what wants to come through. So it's literally a practice of discovering vision, strategy, breakthrough innovation by creating a collective, intuitive listening practice. And then others are working with that. How do we then, as a team, hold that potential together and declare for it at state? In other words, expediting its manifestation.
Yeah, so in a sense, what I'm hearing is the paradigm shift is important because if we live in a particular paradigm, that's going to really color what we see and what we feel is potential and what we exclude.
Yes. The simple metaphor for me is when we think the world is flat, we don't sail west from Europe to discover new lands because you fall off the edge in that paradigm, which wasn't the case. But once we got that it might be a sphere, well, then we go west to get to India. Right, so mental models matter because they allow for possibilities or close them off. Federico Fajin says in this, in the longer version of the interview, he says, if you think of yourself as a physical, if you're identified with your physical body, you are cut off from your quantum experience. And most of what is the qualia or the nuance of your experience or access to information or intuition, all of that is a quantum experience. So if you've got a mental model that says, no, I'm a separate material entity and none of this is real, then you don't even think to access it. And people will listen to this. And Federico said, if I'd have been talking to my 30-year-old self and saying this, he'd have thought I'm crazy. Right. So it took some real experience on his part to open up to what is more fundamental.
We'll talk more about some of these qualities and practices, but I wonder if you could name, other leaders who you feel are playing with this or leading from this paradigm.
Yeah. Probably it's interesting. What came to mind is Steve Jobs. And there's a whole lot of press about Steve, but we happen to have Pixar as a client, so we get a kind of inside story of Steve and his maturing over time. But if you look at what Isaacs, was it Isaacs wrote his book? Wrote his blanking on the author, but if you look at his biography, he says his real genius was intuition. He somehow, and of course, Jobs had a practice of meditation, and he had been to India, and he had done some things that informed that intuitive capability. He saw around corners. He saw where the future was going. And then he said he had the capacity to create what people around him called a reality distortion field. they would set such ambitious time frames to create something when the technology to make it possible didn't even exist. And somehow they would do it. And people just said he somehow distorted reality, time. Now, there's lots of other stuff about Steve. You say, well, did he operate from a unit of paradigm? I don't know. But he had tapped a capacity here that is, I think, the source of genius. And then you can go to your, like Gandhi walks into Calcutta while the riots are happening and they stop. Mandela had an epiphany in prison. He went in as a terrorist, basically, violent. Violent change agent, and he came out with forgiveness. He came out at a more integral level, informed by unity. We're not so different, you and I. We're actually one. King, on the wall of the King Center, it says, "How can I violate you when you are me?" And this is more than a philosophy. It's a seeing into a more fundamental layer of reality from which all is emergent and realizing that there is only this inherent unity and that you are arising as that and so am I. And then when I look in your eyes, I see, if I see deeply enough, I see that we are each other. We are that same fundamental one looking back at each other. So how could I violate you when you are me? Which was Gandhi's principle, right, of nonviolence that King imported. But they both came at it from different spiritual lineages, but both drinking from the well of our inherent unity. How much of that goes on in business, I'm not sure. I do know of a business leader that created quite a, I won't get into the specifics to give it away, but an executive ed function, and it really was very, very powerful work that went on there for many, many years. And it was his capacity to hold that that made it work. When he left, it all shifted. Same words, same models, but not the same impact.
When you say hold that, he was holding.
The unity of it all. He was holding the presence and the energetic of it. And he would even say, like, we were looking for a new course leader, and I was recommending some people to him. And he said, no, it's my responsibility to make sure that they embody the energetic of this program. Do they really resonate it? And then I realized, oh, he's tracking this at a far deeper level than merely the content and design of the program.
I'm thinking of when I met the Dalai Lama. I mean, I say I met, I didn't, I was at his teachings in Dharamsala and he walked back to his compound and I was just a few feet away from him and I just felt this surge of joy and happiness. And, at the time I was always like, wow, was that, kind of placebo?
Yeah, right.
I wasn't, it wasn't. It was remarkable. And of course, like all the people you've named were, rare, remarkable people. And so I wonder for you, like how, because, it feels like we're under pressure and like, I don't want to, it's like time running out, but,
Yeah.
certainly unprecedented change. It feels like we can't wait too long for to, so how do you feel like these times are a pressure cooker that actually might enable
a kind of more people to open to this way of leading? Or or is it, does it take years and years of practice to get there?
I think these times call for it. I think leaders are so challenged that they're open to anything that works more and more. I think there are, if you just look at the developmental literature, those who are fully configured at what we would call creative or self-authoring, and maybe even little late self-authoring, you've got a good 15%, which is a tipping point. I think the kinds of practice that what we're seeing in the early piloting of what we're launching this year is Unity Academy. These energy practices are very accessible. I was talking with a woman yesterday. She came through a 3-day workshop. She said, I hadn't talked to her since. She said, this was last summer. She said, you have no idea what's changed in my life, what's opened, and the creativity, and the, like, I'm writing music, I'm like, the creativity that's come through, and it took my whole work to another level. So she said, I'll never forget those, that practice, you know, this particular one practice. Well, so I don't think it takes years. I think that it's, these are accessible practices that if you learn them and use them, they open doors immediately. And so, yes, there's probably a lifetime of deep practice if you want to become an enlightened master and really break through into what the spiritual adepts are describing. That's a lifelong practice. But to get access to an informational field and to be informed more readily by that field about what you're trying to break through on is there for the taking. And frankly, it doesn't require later stage development. It's a capacity that's inherent in all of us. It's just that at earlier stages, we're kind of locked into our mental models more readily, our mental model of reality. So at later stages, we start to realize it's all a construction, and then it becomes more malleable that we can, oh, well, okay, let me rethink the mental model. And so it's just more open to that, at least in the Western mind. But the capacity is there at every stage. We just don't dismiss it as readily at later stages.
Just, I wonder what you think of, it seems like we, if this is, if we are going to navigate these times and leadership will play a role, then it needs to be collective. Yeah. It's not just the kind of elite few. So I wonder what you think about the idea that these capacities are, in a sense, maybe collective. You know, like there's something you said about on a fundamental level that we are part of this field. And that's something I see emerging now is like almost like our relationality is more primary than our sense of individuality, like a flip in perspective. And therefore, you know, and you mentioned dialogue, you know, that when people come together in a certain kind of dialogue. So the possibility that actually, yeah, building on what you're saying, that it comes through more easily than you think. If we come together in certain practices, that kind of leadership can emerge collectively as well. We can be informed and take collective action.
Yeah, and I think there are emerging models of organization for how to do that. Teal, you know, distributed organizational structures, so on. I don't know, at least in this conversation, like, here's the how-to of that. But What we also dismiss is that we're all nodes on one network. And therefore, when I shift, everybody's updated. And that's how the field works. It's non-local. This is the most surprising discovery in quantum mechanics, is that what seemingly separate things are not, are somehow informationally connected. Only it's not information that's traveling. We don't really know the mechanism. But at vast distances, you get a change of state in an electron or a proton or a subatomic particle. At vast distances, its entangled pair will shift at the same time. So everything is updating. We're part of a human consciousness field, and it's actually been measured. There are devices, there's a whole body of research. We get into it on the Deep Connect series with Dean Radin. They've got these electronic devices that are that measure shifts in consciousness fields. You can put one in a theater, and when the room really gets emotional or some, galvanizing event happens, a crescendo in the theatrical experience happens, these things go off random. They're random generators. They go off random for a while and then they come back. You can, so it's actually, and the same happens globally. And they're experimenting with this even more now. But when Diana died, in labs all over the world, these things all went off random.
When you say these things, they're like them, what are they monitoring? Like,
They're a random number generator. He gets into the electronics of it. He's like Radin's actually an electrical engineer. He gets into the electronics of it, and it's basically like an electronic coin flipper, 10101010101, and so the standard output would be random output that's 50%. So anything that's higher or lower is higher order. At higher degree of order. And they've done experiments where you and I, just with our intention, can move them off random into higher order, just our individual intention. And these experiments have statistical validity in the neighborhood of billions to one beyond chance. They've done so many, and it happens so consistently that it's like, there's no way this is a chance event. So these generators are, they started to look at, is there a collective field? And what happens in the collective field when in a theatrical event or a sporting event? Joe Dispenza uses them in his workshops. When it really gets intensely powerful, energetically, these things go off random. And the same they're measuring in terms of global phenomena. When 9/11 happened, and they show the charts and the books, boom, everywhere, all at the same time. As soon as that thing started to get into the human consciousness, that they went significantly off of random all over the world. So there is a field that we participate in. And when I evolve, it helps you. You know? So I'm participating in the collective through my own emergence, through the holding of a vision of what's possible, the transcending of my own limitations. The deep shadow work and healing that's required. We haven't talked about that. That's required to really open up the pathways that and the constrictions. All of that supports the collective.
And therefore, it seems like no coincidence that there is an explosion of interest in the West in meditation, embodiment, mindfulness, movement, trauma work, psychedelics, in these times, which I think do that it, refine, help refine oneself and build that level of integration.
We're pushing into what I'm talking about. And I just listened to a thing by Ram Dass yesterday where he talks about all of his experimentation and how the first time on psychedelics, it just opened his mind to there's another reality here. I had no idea. And then he tried every combination of stuff he could to try to sustain it. Like he always came down from the high. And eventually he went to India and met people who never come down. They've learned how to stay open to that unitive reality. And so there are practices like you're describing. We're moving in that direction. Shadow work is particularly helpful because the normal condition is quite contracted. Most of us are walking around unaware that we're all bottled up inside. And so we're not much of a, we really constrict the flow. And I do it this way because it's a toroidal flow. In all the traditions, there's a energy current and it runs down the front and up the back. This is a consistent pattern. And that flow can get really constricted. And when it does, it shuts off creativity and flow state and moving with. And we operate from a much smaller place. And so shadow work is simply allows for those constricted parts of ourselves where we've contracted to free up, to loosen, to open, and then more flow comes through.
It's interesting as well how I've noticed when I'm in a kind of resonance, either with my own sense of awe and wonder through certain things that light me up, or with other people, I often feel that kind of, that vertical dimension light up in my body, a kind of sense of current, descending current or ascending current. Seems to go with that.
Yes. And that's when I said it's accessible and palpable, and you know it when you're in it. That can become a kind of habitual experience. You can habituate to it, train your body and field. And that's how I want it running and tune it up. And so, but it is very visceral. And I'll often feel a tingle here in the top of my head, especially if I'm doing a presentation at a keynote and I say something that I know is hitting, that I can feel in the resonance coming back is really hitting, landing, touching people deeply. I'll get this tingling right in the top of my head, and I'll just stand in and go, okay, I'm right. This is it, you know? And you can feel it come right down the front. And frankly, and I talked about this with Federico, all three center, in order for real creativity to happen, and he's talking about invention, all three centers must be wide open. Head, heart, and belly, gut, pelvis. So when you really are in that energetic flow, you'll feel a kind of expanded mind and a pressure. You'll feel joy in the heart and a radiation in the heart, and you'll feel pleasure in the pelvis. And then you know that you're in the circulation. And that's when you're most available now, because energy is just flowing through you. You're most available for a download. And that's when I sit in that flow, I simply receive. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Huh. And then I can actually play with it or process it because I'm in an expanded state and the processing speed is very fast. So that's what I mean by do my best thinking. Ken Wilber calls it supermind. You know, it's your or overmind. You're really able to work with ideas at a much more expanded and faster pace.
How would you open yourself to that place? So that you feel like your heart, and I know like one answer is over time doing integrative shadow work, but do you have practices that could in the moment open those centers and then kind of,
Yes.
yeah, what would
Yes.
you share one with us? Or,
Well, you know, I mean, all the traditions, whether it's shamanistic, indigenous, whether it's East, West, contemplative, they always start with breath. So if you just start with attention in the heart, and allow yourself to just feel there, sense the difference between feeling or emotion and sensing your breath in the heart, a space. Now notice the lungs surround the heart. So this is a huge energetic taking in. And just the practice of putting attention in the heart begins the flow. If you notice, like for me right now, there's just the edge of joy. Just the slightest. And if I just keep breathing into that, it opens. It gets bigger, gets more intense, and it starts to move. And then I'm like, whoa, that's so just a simple starting place. Breathe into the heart and let your attention rest in the heart and notice the edge of joy, love.
Yeah.
And then we can build on that. There's deeper layers to the field, ara, which is the martial arts work around. There's really learning what in Taoism is called this microcosmic orbit, moving energy down the front, you know, breathing it, you know, inhaling it up the back from the sacrum, exhaling down the front. Tension in the heart. And then, of course, you can move attention around and say, okay, let me really open the mind. Let me open the crown of the head. And breathing in and down. And then open down into the pelvis. So there's a practice of circulating energy and opening. And then there are awareness practices that drop you into deeper consciousness itself. The kind of levels that are pointed to in the, say, the Zen or non-dual traditions, where there's only awareness.
Yeah.
And there are pointing out instructions for that. And then when you combine them, so you are awareness only and energy, you become conscious energy, and there's only the field of energy, and now the flow is really cooking. And you're are really available.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of some of the shamanic traditions.
Right.
And the three threads that have been really meaningful in my life is a path of individuation. So in a way, like the shadow work, cleaning up, maturing and development, awakening into non-duality, but also ensoulment. And I think some of those
Yeah.
ensouled traditions,
Right.
even just a simple act of like orienting to what lights up my curiosity or my deepest heart's desire. And as a sensing practice and learning to, that can also open me into this sense of like an energetic attunement as well.
Yeah. I love your notion of my heart's desire, because what I'm describing is heart-centered. And in the Brennan School, there's the heart and then the high heart here, which is in the Hara dimension, which is deeper than the auric field. And this is the seat of your heart's longing, your deepest intention for this life. And so when you touch into that, you light up. And so it is a heart-centered practice that we're talking about. It's actually devotional. Love's longing for love. Love's opening to love. And it's all love. It's all light. It's all energy. It's all information. It's all grace. All these are words for the same fundamental reality. And we simply open-hearted form connection, relatedness, heart connection. And of course, the more that opens, you realize you already are the love you seek. You are the one love. It's arising as you. And I, thou, begins to dissolve. That's what's called non-dual, not two. Yes, there's a body here, but it's not separate, not two, not other than the whole.
It seems like to me that kind of longing is an underappreciated gateway to the non-dual. A lot of non-dual practice maybe works with the mind, the kind of head center first. Maybe, you know, there's complexity to this, but that longing is such a potent non-dual practice.
I think it, if you look at the literatures, there's devotional practice in many of the traditions that moves into high subtle or what's called mystical awareness. And there it's blissful, it's unitive, it's love on steroids. It's in some of the literature, it's erotic, especially some of the women contemplative mystics. They're running this energy through and it hits the pelvis and it's quite pleasurable. And so this kind of spiritual practice at this subtle, high subtle spiritual level of awareness, high level of realization, is actually really blissful and pleasurable. And it is about this longing of love for itself. So it's a kind of lovemaking with the divine, with reality, with the one, as the one. And that can then open beyond that into this non-dual awareness, like, oh, there's con only consciousness arising as energy. And I am both. I'm the one awareness that is behind all things, prior to all things. And I am the energetic expression of that. And this is why the separatist paradigm doesn't make any sense, because as Niels Bohr, I think it was, yeah, Niels Bohr said, all of quantum physics presumes consciousness. He says, more fundamental than energy, matter, space, and time is consciousness. That energy, matter, space, and time are derivative, his word, from consciousness.
Niels Bohr said that as well, so
Yeah,
yeah.
that's Niels Bohr, right? And so, and Einstein said, there's no matter, there's only spirit, right? Expressing itself as energy. And so, there's this energetic practice that we've been describing. And then you can also step a deeper, more fundamentally deeper, and contact awareness itself. And that's pretty astonishing when you touch it. And then what we're doing in the academy is these can blend into one. And then as a leader, I'm just present. And I got all my senses tuned. The somatic awareness is refined. And I'm radiating the field you described about that creates possibilities in the room and opens to collective dialogue and intuition. All of that becomes just my presence now.
I did have a question about. Let me ask this instead, actually. So, what is there any invitation you'd like to make to people who are listening right now? We've shared some practices that people could do. I'm thinking of people who feel touched by what you shared, and there's a kind of recognition in their hearts, in some sense.
Well, what you know, go to our website, take a look at the Unity Academy. It's under events. If you go down under events, it's there. It's for those who know the Leadership Circle work, it's not a new framework, it's the deeper framework from which the Leadership Circle emerged. So the Leadership Circle is an ex and the whole model that underpins it was an expression of this, what we've been talking about, made very accessible in terms of, you know, how to be helpful. But the deeper ground, as I've said, has been this dialogue that I've been in with intuition, letting it guide creation. And so there's an academy there about how to work your way into that capacity more and more fully. So everything we've been talking about is very experientially worked there. And if it resonates, give us a call. So this is new, and it's kind of what I do. What I do is constantly go to the edge of thought leadership and practice leadership and say, how do I distill that back into more usable form? And so we've done that in a lot of that in the transition from what we call reactive to creative. So now I'm playing with, well, what is the next m major move for leaders and coaches and consultants from creative to integral? But it's unity informed. Because as you get into later stages, it becomes more and more open and porous to the informational field that we've been describing. And so, unity informed integral practice, it's a master practitioner school. Right now, it's geared more toward coaches, although we have some leaders coming through it. But, we're going to start framing this up for a leadership audience in the next year or so.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Bob. And like I just in the spirit of our conversation today, not only appreciate the information that you're sharing, but the space you speak from and just the kind of shared sense of resonance and field like quality to our connection. So
Yeah.
just want to thank you for
Well,
that.
you have that in spades, Joel, and that's part of why I love these conversations, is because there is that resonance and spaciousness that you hold. And then, you know, what emerges in the conversation is unscripted and surprising, and then also has a sort of completion about it. that's often spread like, wow, that really deleted itself. So I enjoy these a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been a true pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.